Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Reggie McIntyre, and I am your guest host for the week of July the 25th, 2017. Today we are joined by our frequent guest and prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. D.R., how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Great, thank you. And then we are also pleased to be joined by Mariah Tingard. Mariah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well also.
Awesome. Great. Well, I am the guest host for this week. I'm very pleased to be here. And so we have a lot on our plate tonight that we need to get through. So DR, what do you think we should talk about, this Honest Act? It's even the name Honest Act scares me. So what's this all about?
This is a piece of sleazy legislation that has made its way through the House and is now being considered in the Senate. The bill in essence says that, according to thehill.com, it would, quote, bar the EPA from considering its regulatory activities in peer-reviewed scientific work unless raw data were fully available to anyone who seeks to repeat the study, unquote. And while on the surface it sounds like it's good government legislation, in reality what it is an attempt to create another climate gate to basically allow, to basically clear a path for, you know, anti-science folks to sort of nitpick and sort of look through various scientific findings for things that they can distort and lie about so as to sort of weaken the public support for action based on sound science.
I see.
So it's from what I understand, the acronym HONEST, O-N-E-S-T, is for Honest and Open New EPA Science Treatment Act, I think. And It's a rebrand of Lamar Smith, who's the Republican congressman from Texas. He originally introduced a congressional reform act called the Secret Science Reform Act. And this is sort of a rebrand of that same thing. And you know, the thing that's really, of course, alarming in it is this releasing of raw data, which essentially means that they want, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me that it means that they want people's medical records. You know, if you have been diagnosed with sort of lead poisoning and they want to regulate lead or whatever, you have to turn over that raw data. Means the records, your medical records, or cancer records. If there's a cancer cluster and they're trying to put some regulations around a business in an area that maybe is polluting and leading to cancer, well, all of those people's medical records are the raw data, and that's incredibly problematic because of HIPAA rules, obviously. That's my understanding of what's really kind of, you know, frustrating about this. You know, it's going to add a lot of money and a lot of delay to the scientific process, and basically it's going to prevent the EPA from using the best available science to protect public health, which is it's a frightening thing.
Right. I mean, what I was looking at was, so my background is in, I used to work for EPA as a criminal investigator. And so oftentimes, for instance, here's a good example is we would investigate, back in the day, we would investigate sewage treatment plants because if they discharge in violation of their permit, you know, we could bring it to trial and see if somebody get them either to plead guilty or they would go to jail for doing what they were doing or impose a good criminal penalty on them. But we would have to do the and we have to get the we have to get samples and then we would have to get them analyzed, and then the defense counsel for the opposing counsel would always want the sample results that we had. Well, the sample results were not available because they only last so many hours, like 48 hours, and then you can't use them anymore. So we go round and round and round with that. And I can see how this could really really put the brakes on getting any sort of progress on anything. I mean, I think that's the whole point of one of the points here, is that they just slow everything down, you know, slow mm-hmm. down the process. Hey, is that what your thoughts
I mean,
are?
Yeah, well, that's a great
Mariah.
Point about, yeah, you know, that's a great point about, and it slows the process down, and that, you know, you can't, if you don't have the data left, if you've thrown out the data, I mean, that's, I think that's another thing I read, is that some of these scientists, the raw data, you know, if it's not public people's health records, the other raw data might be sort of samples that they've taken, and they've long since discarded those samples.
Right.
And they've maybe even discarded some of those data sets because they said, you know, it's been published, this has been peer-reviewed, it's been looked at and looked at and looked at over and over again, it's really solid, I don't need to maintain this massive amount of data or whatever it is that they had associated with it. And some of them can't even go back to that data, let alone provide it so that the study can be replicated, which is one of the, I think, one of the parts of this this Honest Act, is it has to be able to be replicated.
And then can you give our listeners just a quick either one of you, on what does peer-reviewed mean? What does that entail? How long does that last? What is that exactly?
Yeah.
Right, can you do that?
Sure. I mean, you know, the peer-reviewed studies, I spent a little bit of time as an analytical chemist, and peer-reviewed studies, you know, you submit your study to a panel of experts in the same field, and these are really narrow-focused fields. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, big, broad scientists that are examining big, you know, this is a very focused field of scientists who really understand your science. And they look through and they try and pick apart any possible errors in your data sets. Mm-hmm. They dissect everything and really try and find any place where your data is not solid. And then they ask you to go back and run the experiment again, or to rewrite the experiment, or whatever it is. And it's not just one person. You have a whole team of people that look at it before they will even publish that study. And once it's published, then you get more scientific analysis, people who are trying to repeat your experiment, or who are, you know, in the same field and who are wondering about your science and maybe try and do it. So the peer review process is incredibly, incredibly robust. And, you know, it's designed to make sure that the science that gets produced is honest. And as a scientist, you don't want to put out a study that is flawed or erroneous, because that, you know, tarnishes your reputation as a scientist. So the integrity of scientists that are producing these reports is also very strong, where they're making sure that their data is solid and that they've kept very, very careful records all along the way.
And DR, I would say we've probably seen this in previous administrations. Did George W. try to do something of this nature in that you can recall in the past under his administration, do you recall?
Yeah, there were various attempts during the George W. Bush administration to basically try to, in their minds, open up the science for scrutiny, of course, by the fossil fuel industry.
Yep.
And such efforts were resisted, but it sort of goes to show you this sort of last-ditch Hail Mary effort by deniers of climate science to try to figure out some way to sort of they want to replicate their own previous study. Their previous study was ClimateGate, and we saw the success they had with that. The whole ClimateGate nonsense essentially played a critical role in killing the cap and trade legislation that was that at that point making its way mm-hmm. to the Senate. So ClimateGate was such a hit that they've been desperately trying to sort of redo it, and this legislation is designed to once again give them the chance to sort of confuse gullible parts of the electorate into believing that science isn't science.
Yeah.
And in conjunction with this, there's also the Science Advisory Board Reform Act. I think also maybe, I'm not sure if it was also submitted by Lamar Smith, but the Science Advisory Board Reform Act is going to reshape the advisory board so that a scientist who receives an EPA grant is forbidden to serve, but an industry-sponsored expert who has a direct interest in being regulated can serve as long as they disclose that interest, which seems pretty backward to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you completely. And anything that is called the Honest Act just cannot be honest. It just is. It has to dishonest on its face. So, so I would agree with you. I would agree with you both. So I think I think we need to talk about Administrator Pruitt. DR, what was it that you were thinking about bringing up this evening? What were you want to talk about on that one?
Well, the New York Times reported this week that unqualified EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt turns out to be quite the lazy bum, constantly heading back home to his house 10 times over 3 months this year at taxpayer expense. This was based on a report prepared by the Environmental Integrity Project, which is a group founded by former EPA officials, who has basically made it clear that Pruitt is not terribly interested in doing his job, which from a certain perspective, you know, every day he's out of that office is the day he's not screwing up the environment. But nevertheless, it basically goes to show you that this is largely a no-show job. And it just goes to show you once again that this man is without question, with only a few months on the job, the single worst EPA administrator in United States history. And the former EPA administrator, the far more qualified Gina McCarthy, she was on WGBH Greater Boston Radio Weekend and basically described how, according from what she understands, the Pruitt's minions are basically trying to gut every single regulation they possibly can, trying to slow walk every single thing they can possibly have to, can, essentially trying to implode the EPA, essentially. It is an American disgrace, an international disgrace, and it has been reported that Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, among others, basically is trying to have this guy investigated on ethics grounds to raise the prospect of whether or not he could be disbarred as an attorney. And if, in fact, that does occur, you do wonder, you know, what will happen to his political career, because it's been widely rumored that part of the reason why he's, you know, going on this sort of, crusade to get rid of all vestiges of science is that he wants to improve his standing when he goes back to Oklahoma and presumably runs either for governor of Oklahoma or potentially goes after Jim Inhofe's seat if Jim Inhofe chooses not to run again. So it just goes to show you putting politics before the planet, putting politics before people, just the sickness of this sort of behavior.
Yeah. And I had read that, you know, of course these folks have, Pruitt has family at home, and Gina McCarthy, I think also, she did not travel anywhere, obviously, anywhere near as much as she did, but I think the really big difference about Pruitt's travel, besides that it's been significantly more than usual, as you mentioned, DR, but that he may have violated rules that stipulate when government employees can use taxpayer money to travel. That hasn't been officially alleged, but he's been using a lot of taxpayer money to get back and forth to Oklahoma. And, you know, of course, in the meantime, the EPA budget has been slashed and the EPA is getting rid of fitness centers for their employees. He's using tax money to go back and forth to his house. And it sounds like, from one thing I read, the travel records show that Pruitt is more focused on cultivating his relationships with industry and conservative political organizations in his home state than he is on protecting the environment. You know, essentially what you're saying, DR, that he's really kind of using the EPA and taxpayer money to go back and work on his political career in Oklahoma. It's not definite that he's doing that, but it's certainly has that aura.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, my experience when I was working for EPA in criminal investigations, one of the things that we used to do was to provide protection for the administrator. And I wasn't assigned to the team, thank you God, because I far preferred investigations. But on occasion, they would come out to, you know, Wheeling, West Virginia, or Charleston, West Virginia, and we'd have to ramp up and dance them around and show them around. Basically, it's like similar to Secret Service, although we did not get any training from EPA. But in any event, I had noticed that he was spending his vouchers were he has spent $12,000 thus far, and it's almost like what they have to do is legitimize going out on the government dime, like saying, okay, I'm going to give an award to a publicly owned treatment works, you know, or I'm going to go and look at this river or whatever, and that's how they can work around the system. But in any event, yes, it was good to see that Gina McCarthy always paid for her own travel. So I think it was like out of 93. Like 45 out of 93 days he had been home or something like that. So
right.
Very, very interesting. DR, give me a few minutes on the red team, blue team. What's the story on that?
Yes, it's been reported that the Trump administration is beginning to put together its so-called red team to basically scrutinize climate science, and the red team is being provided by the Heartland Institute, the fossil fuel funded company that's very famous for claiming that if you believe in climate science, you're no different from the Unabomber. This effort
yes.
has been escorted by former Obama science advisor John Holdren, who noted in an op-ed for the Boston Globe that climate science is already scrutinized by other climate scientists. There's already red teams and blue teams, and the result of what the red teams and blue teams have investigated is, in fact, that climate change is real and caused by the burning of fossil fuels. It's very interesting that this occurs when we're approaching the five-year anniversary of a preliminary version of this sort of red team, blue team thing, where the Koch brothers funded a gentleman by the name of Richard Mueller, who was going to do his own scrutiny of Michael Mann's hockey stick, and even though he was funded by the Koch brothers, and obviously he was expected to deliver a result attacking the hockey stick, he declared that he could not disprove the hockey stick, and yes, that global warming was real and caused by the burning of fossil fuels. So it's very interesting that 5 years after fossil fuel interests tried this crap and it failed, that they're trying to do it again.
Yeah, and you know, just a little background on the Heartland Institute. You know, in the 1990s, they were working with Philip Morris in that. Mm-hmm. Well, basically, Philip Morris paid them $50,000 to support its pro-tobacco activities. So that's some of the background on them. And they've received $100,000 from the Koch brothers, or they received between 1987 and 2011. And you know, as we know, the Koch brothers have put over $88 million into groups denying climate change. So the Heartland Institute is not exactly an unbiased scientific entity to vet this data, which, as you mentioned, you know, has been vetted. It's been vetted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is an international organization. I mean, this is, you know, there's you can't say that there's some hidden conspiracy theory agenda from this international organization that's basically done 5 metadata evaluations of all of the scientific findings on climate change. And, you know, their assessments, each year they keep getting more emphatic about the need to act on the science, not less. So, you know, we've done the red team, blue team thing, like you said, DR, and like John Holdren said. It's basically like if someone, you know, a trained doctor came to you and said, 97% of the doctors you spoke to said, well, you know, you're very sick. And you said, no, I want to debate because that 3%, I want to believe that 3% that I'm not very sick. So let's debate about whether I'm sick. Let's just ponder about, you know, if I should get treatment. Like, you're not going to do that if 97% of your doctors say that you're sick. No, you're going to act. You're going to act to try and, you know, fix yourself, to heal yourself. And right now our home, our planet is sick. And here we are dithering. I mean, as you can tell, it gets me worked up.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we're going to have to leave it there. That's what we got for our show this week, for our podcast this week. And just so that you know, that you can check out our links to most of what we have discussed on our blog at www.massclimateaction.org/blog. And you can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/massclimateaction. And please share us. And you can listen directly to your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and other directories. And you can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the U.S. puts a long-term and equitable price on carbon. Thank you for being here, DR and Mariah, and thanks to everyone for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool. All right, I better save that.